Hey everybody, welcome back to Minor Details, our second episode. And the first time around, we spent time talking about leading up to the season, and now we finally have baseball to talk about. Just to introduce you to everybody, I'm Jason Kemp with the Iowa Cubs, Richie Giuliano with the Knoxville Smokies, Brandon King with the South Bend Cubs, and Luke Maley with the Myrtle Beach Pelicans. So we have baseball to talk about, gentlemen, which is certainly a much better spot to be in than when we last talked. We'll start with you, Luke, in Myrtle Beach. The Pelicans got off to a great start in Charleston, but a little bit of an up and down start since that point. I know you went 1-5 on the homestand, but against a really good Carolina team. But what have you seen so far? What are the early themes with the guys in Myrtle Beach?
Yeah, early on, you know, the 3-game sweep on the road in Charleston set the tempo. And I think when they came back home, 1-5 series, as you mentioned, here at Pelicans Ballpark in Myrtle Beach against what I consider to be a buzzsaw in Carolina. They're hoarding the top 10 prospects right now for the Brewers organization. And they were very, very impressive. But it was interesting to see from team to team. In Charleston, you saw a lot of fireballers on the mound, but some location issues. And in talking with our guys, they said it's a complete change in pace. In Charleston, they saw a bunch of upper 90s fastballs, but they weren't located as well as in Carolina. That series, they were dotting the outside corner, a lot of strikeouts looking, that sort of thing. But you saw an adjustment over the course of the series, and some of those young guys that are getting their first dip in pro ball, or maybe just the affiliated side of pro ball, are starting to find their swings offensively. And you fast forward, now they're on the road in Augusta, and they lost the first two games of that series, got back in the win column in game three of that set. But the bats are starting to come alive. Cole Mathis, who's the top 15 prospect, slots in at 15th. First multi-homer night of his career in last night's game at the point of this recording. And you've seen some different names, and we're going to get into specifics of plays and names as we move on. But it's a team that's really well knit. They mesh well together. They're a lot of fun, but they lock in when it comes time. And over the course of the year, they play in really good defense. And that starts with bench coach D'Angelo Jimenez. He is a defensive guru. And so they played sound defensively. And I think they're starting to turn that corner where I think we're going to win some games here over the coming weeks.
We're going to talk about players like you mentioned a little bit later on, and most of us are going to focus on position players who are off to a great start, which is easy to do early in the season. But I wanted to ask you about the guy who started opening night. I was interested to see Evan Aschenbeck as a starter. We all saw him in the College World Series pitching out of the bullpen and closing games, but he's been phenomenal. Just looking at the numbers, 13 strikeouts over 9 scoreless in his first two games. What do the Cubs think of him as a starting pitcher in his early returns?
Yeah, so Aschenbeck's an interesting story. He started at Blinn College, a small junior college near his hometown in Brenham, Texas. And he was a starter there and then transitioned to a reliever when he went to Texas A&M, obviously made that deep College World Series run where the Aggies ended up coming up just a little bit short, falling to Tennessee in the College World Series final. But he, in talking with him, he says he wanted to get there, and he said, I wanted to be on the mound as much as possible. So he was fine being a reliever. He got on the mound, and his words, it was, if we had a chance to win a ball game, if it was close, I was going to be on the mound. And he's a guy with a ton of experience, you know, just getting into professional baseball here in single A in his first year. It feels like he's a veteran almost. And he's definitely a leader amongst the pitching staff, and he's been excellent. Lefty on the mound, locating. His first outing went 7 strikeouts in his first start with no walks, and then followed up 5 innings in relief. We had an opener situation with some weather where he came out of the pen, but went 5 innings, 6 punch outs, and I think he walked 3 in that outing. So he's a guy with a ton of good command. He has big leagues written all over him. He's mature beyond his years. And it's going to be a lot of fun to see him develop specifically as a starter, but it's been great to this point.
All right, BK, let's move one step up to high A. The South Bend Cubs 4-8 in the early going of the season, a tough series in progress right now as we chat with West Michigan, who's got a ton of talent, I think a lot like Carolina had in the Brewers farm system. The offense seems to be maybe struggling just a little bit early on if you look at the league rankings, but wanted to mention two pitchers, especially after you give your initial kind of summation of the first 2 weeks, Jackson Wiggins and Jozan Akendo. But if you want to start with the early feeling from the guys there in South Bend, you spent a lot of time on the road, but what you've seen early on in 25.
Yeah, currently talking to you from Hampton Inn here in Grand Rapids. So getting ready to head to the ballpark and hopefully win a ball game today. But first of all, I wanted to back up Luke's point. D'Angelo Jimenez, defensive goat, longtime big leaguer. He was our bench coach a couple of years ago, and that guy's an absolute stud. I actually played a lot of golf with him a couple of years ago. We shared the golf cart a bunch, and he's the absolute best, and the organization's lucky to have him. It's been a streaky first couple of weeks, and in the Midwest League in April, Jason, you've been in this league. That's something that happens often to most teams, I would say, streaky. There are very few teams that end up having a winning an 8 or 9 game stretch in 10 games. Doesn't happen often. So yeah, I mean, you lose 3 to start the season, you win 4 in a row for the Peoria Chiefs to start the last homestand. Then you drop the last 2. Really weird one last Sunday, 11-9 game. We scored 7 runs in the 7th inning. Made it a 9-8 ball game. Peoria got 2 runs back. Game finishes in crazy fashion. David Avitia, South Bend Cubs catcher, throws a shutout 1-2-3 inning in a 2-run game to keep the game alive. We get a runner on in the next, just can't finish it off with the comeback. So huge shout out David Avitia, because the guy throws a 1-2-3 inning against the heart of the Peoria order, and it was our only 1-2-3 inning of the day. So some things just don't make a lot of sense in this game. But as you said, this series against West Michigan, they've got Max Clark, they've got Josue Briseño, they've got a bunch of Detroit Tigers top 10 prospects. And it's one of those series where Max Clark goes 0 for 4 in the game on Tuesday. He's 0 for 4. He wins the game on a sac fly RBI in 10. And it's just one of those things. You do everything perfect. You keep the number 3 overall pick 0 for 4, but Max Clark, finds a way to win the game. So no, it's been a streaky first few weeks, but hopefully the rest of this week goes well. We can win a ball game tonight and see what happens.
Talking about those two pitchers, number 10 Cubs prospect, at least according to MLB.com, Jackson Wiggins, 3 starts, a 1.46 ERA, 15 strikeouts in 12 and a third innings to start the year. So talk a little bit about him, and then if you can flip to the bullpen and Oquendo, who has 11 strikeouts, he's allowed one hit in just over 7 innings, and what you've seen from those two.
Yeah, so I know Cade Horton's been a superstar for you guys, but Jackson Wiggins has been our superstar. And 3 starts, he's been excellent. 7 strikeouts last night against West Michigan. A couple of those came against some Tigers' top prospects. But I think what I appreciate most about Jackson is in Beloit to open the season, he's throwing in 30-degree weather, but his fastball wasn't very good that night. The last 2 starts, though, against Peoria and now West Michigan, his fastball has been blazing. 98 miles an hour plus. Great 4-pitch mix, slider, curveball, changeup, and he has been mixing his pitches well. So what he ends up being is kind of the fun question of can he transition into a big league starter as this 4-pitch guy? But if you need him to work out of the bullpen, who knows what that fastball can get upwards towards, and then he can kind of pick the slider or the curve of what he wants to stick with and hopefully keep that changeup, because I think that's his most underrated pitch. When it comes to Oquendo, I mean, the guy misses all of 2024. He's a South Bend Cub briefly in 23, but he has come back and just shoved, absolutely shoved. And he's not an overly hard thrower. And I know that's kind of funny in today's game because he gets upwards of 94, but that's not considered a hard thrower in today's game anymore. But 94 mile an hour fastball, wipeout slider. I mean, his first 4 2/3 innings of the year were perfect. To this point, he gave up his first base hit earlier in that series against West Michigan, but after about 6 innings of work on the season, his only blemish was a hit by pitch. So he's giving manager Nick Lavella a lot of wiggle room. In South Bend's first 4 games of the year, he had 2 wins. I know wins are kind of an inflated stat nowadays, and not a lot of people look at that anymore. But 4 wins on the season for the team. Oquendo's got 2. He's doing some big work out of the bullpen. And Vince Riley as well. I'll throw him into the hat as well. He's got 2 saves early on in this season. Was Myrtle Beach's closer last year. So Vince Riley's been great out of the back end of the pen, too.
Good stuff. And now I want to talk about the team in Knoxville, but I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about opening night on Tuesday. Richie, what was it like in the ballpark leading up to the game? During the game, it was a great game that was really closely contested until the very end. But what was opening night like in a brand new ballpark?
Yeah, it was incredible. It was actually everything I thought it would be and more. Before the game, a great ceremony outside, and then we had a lot of festivities. We had caricatures out there, people breathing fire. It was like almost like a circus outside. There were people on stilts, face painting. Everybody was having a good time. And then leading up to first pitch was very patriotic, and I thought represented the Knoxville area very well. did the national anthem. They sworn in 45 new members of the United States Air Force, which I thought was really cool. And then the Bald Eagle, Lincoln the Bald Eagle, who is the Eagles Eagle and the one that flew over for the Super Bowl, came out of a balcony in left field and flew around the field. Now, he took a long time to actually find his keeper because the fireworks went off. And I think he like kind of got a little obstructed of his view, but he actually ended up hitting a photographer in right field. That was pretty funny, but it was awesome to see like the Bald Eagle come out, and we had a huge flag with like the Boy Scouts out there. It was a very patriotic moment and a great way to open up this brand new ballpark. You know, like you said, it was a very tightly contested game, and then Casey Opitz, our switch hitting catcher, hit a go ahead home run late in the game. So that was a pretty cool moment to see the fireworks flying, the lights change colors and they flicker. So I talked to him after the game. He's like, yeah, that was for sure a top three moment in my career. And, you know, it was really cool to see the city of Knoxville be able to celebrate this with over 8,000 people here. So it was pretty awesome.
6-5 record at this point, tied for first in the North Division. It's still kind of early to look at that stuff. But, hey, you got four teams in your division. It's not bad to be right up there at the top. Talk about Will Sanders a little bit. I know you're going to talk about some of the offensive guys later on, but what have you seen from Will Sanders? What are your overall impressions of the Smokies early on?
Yeah, I think Sanders and Kipp are going to be our two horses this year in the starting rotation. You know, Sanders had two really strong starts, and he's had three overall. Pounds the strike zone, which I've been impressed with, and then has a really good curveball. So I think Sanders and then Kipp has been, you know, he's come out of nowhere. I mean, he has two starts, ERA under one, a guy out of Yale that was an undrafted pick by the Chicago Cubs. Was actually going to go to Notre Dame for his master's, but then the Cubs decided to pick him up. And, you know, he was in Myrtle Beach a couple years ago, and he's just been a great prospect for the Cubs. I mean, just out of nowhere, pounding the zone with 13 strikeouts in 10 innings. So really impressed with those two guys to start the year in our starting rotation. They've helped us a lot to where we're at right now.
On our side, the Iowa Cubs, obviously a very fun roster, a very fun start to the year. Just got off of a two-week road trip to the miserable conditions in Indianapolis, sorry, BK, and Toledo. Not great. About six rain delays, a couple suspended games that we had to pick up later on. We've already played one split doubleheader, and we have another one scheduled for June in Omaha with a 1 o'clock start and then a 7 p.m. afterwards, which is quite an event. A lot of guys sleeping on the floor in the clubhouse. But now with the recent news that Matt Shaw is joining the lineup, all top six in the MLB pipeline, top 10 Cubs prospects are here in Des Moines. A series right now going on against St. Paul, which is another one of the unanimously rated top 10 most talented teams in minor league baseball. And the iCubs have taken two of the first three. Talk more about the offensive performance on Wednesday in a 20-6 win. All kinds of team records were matched or broken, and a really impressive day all the way around. The iCubs lead the league in batting average at .285 by 12 points over the next closest team. Also lead the league in doubles by a pretty wide margin. And the cool thing has been all of the publicity is towards these prospects, rightfully so, but it's the journeyman and the veteran like Reese McGuire, Chris Flexen, Trevor Richards. You've got Carlos Perez in there, Greg Allen, that have played a lot of time in the big leagues, but have come here knowing that, look, I've got a chance to be part of a really good organization and teach some kids who are the future of the game how to play the game the right way, how to go about your business. And they've taken pride in that. And those guys, oftentimes hitting 7, 8, and 9 in the lineup, have been the keys toward victory. And that's just the lineup depth and working starting pitchers, getting into the bullpen, and then really being able to find their footing late in games. But you look at the rotation, we talked briefly about Cade Horton. All of the headlines are there, rightfully so. Connor Nolan started on opening night. He's probably been the best pitcher in a lot of different regards in the International League so far. Chris Flexen threw over 100 innings in the big leagues last year for the White Sox, and so his numbers don't look great. But I would have a hard time believing the long relief guy or the fifth starter for half of the league is better than Chris Flexen, and he's been incredible so far this year. Jordan Wicks is in that rotation. Keegan Thompson has made a couple of spot starts and been lights out in that role. So It's been a really fun team to watch, and I think it should be as long as the big league club stays healthy, and until we get to that wild time of the year when you start looking to fill spots on the big league roster and names start getting thrown out, and who knows what happens in the AAA clubhouse after that. But it's been a team that's lived up to the expectations so far. So that's a look at what's happened in the season so far. Up next, we're going to touch on some of the players that we want to highlight from the early going in 2025. So we'll start that in Iowa again, and we'll head back through the organization. I wanted to talk more about Connor Noland, who started opening day. You talk about all the pitching prospects and the prospects in general on the roster, and he's kind of a guy that flies under the radar a little bit, former Arkansas Razorback. He's enjoyed playing with his college teammate Christian Franklin here, and getting to watch those two go to work together, Franklin playing behind him out in center field. But the big development has been for Connor Noland, and I was talking to Tony Cagoule, the iCubs pitching coach, about this. In spring training, they had an idea that he was going to start switching which side of the rubber he was on based on the handedness of the hitter. So he'll go to one side for lefties and then switch in the middle of the inning to the other side against righties, which is something that kind of went away talking to manager Marty Peavy 10 to 15 years ago, where pitchers didn't want to do that anymore, and they used to do it all the time. And he's used it, and he feels like the angles are better. He takes away some of the vision of a hitter with the ball coming in, and he's talked about being conscious on finding the release point and making adjustments throughout the game because you are moving back and forth, you know, sometimes from at-bat to at-bat, one after another. But all in all, he's been fantastic, 2-0 with a 1.69 ERA in three starts. He's 25 in his first year in AAA. He's given up 8 hits in 16 innings. And again, he credits a lot of that to the decision to mess with where he's positioned on the mound. And I think if you have guys like that on a roster like this that contribute in that fashion, it's going to be a juggernaut as we move through the campaign so far. So excited to see Connor Noland as he kind of makes his way further and further into his first AAA season. Once hitters adjust, how he then follows up and adjust back to what they're doing to him. So down in Knoxville, I know, Richie, you wanted to talk about infielder Pedro Ramirez hitting .333, leads the team by a long shot in RBI. But what have you seen from Pedro so far this season?
Yeah, I'm really impressed with his ability to take the ball to all parts of the field. A really good inside-out hitter. And I think a lot of the opposing pitchers are having trouble throwing the ball in the zone against him because they can't figure out where to put it, because he's going to hit it wherever you put it. And I know BK saw this last year, played over 100 games in South Bend and hit over .280. So he's a very consistent hitter in this organization and a guy that has been a workforce right now. He's out there early hitting at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, always getting in extra work. Has good power, too. Yesterday hit a ball off the right center wall to clear the bases for a 3-RBI double. A really good prospect I think the Cubs have right now in the organization.
In South Bend, I think this was a pretty easy answer for you this time, BK. It's kind of the year that everybody been waiting for a certain shortstop, and he certainly answered the bell so far in 2025 there at South Bend.
It's the breakout season, boys, for Christian Hernandez, and it is here. It's beautiful, and it's gone well. I mean, heck, the guy is leading the Midwest League in base hits. His first 9 games of the season, he had 6 multi-hit games. He's stolen 8 bases. He's playing a spectacular shortstop. And I would argue, with all the offensive accolades, I mean, last night broke an 11 straight on base streak for him. I would argue most impressive from Hernandez has been his defense because, again, Jason, you've seen this before. Young shortstops in the Midwest League usually don't fare well in the month of April. When you're playing in 30-degree weather, there's a lot of errors made. And in my time in South Bend, and historically in South Bend, some great shortstops have struggled here, a la Gleyber Torres in 2015. Gleyber led the league in errors in the month of April during his time here in South Bend. A great shortstop of pass for the South Bend Cubs was Andy Weber. He won a national championship at Virginia. He won a Midwest League championship with us. He's now playing in the Diamondbacks organization. He struggled in April at shortstop. Christian Hernandez has 1 error in 11 games. It came at second base. So at shortstop, he has been perfect. So, but at the plate again, he's using the opposite field and talking with Nick Lovello, our manager, who has had him even since back in the rookie ball days. It just was a more proper preparation this season by Hernandez that set him up to get to this point as a 21-year-old. And I did want to touch first on Pedro Ramirez, what Richie was saying. Pedro with us last season had a stretch at the plate where he went 25 for 48. He was the hottest hitter in all of baseball, and he has some underrated power. Had a walk-off grand slam late in the season for the Cubs. And just a quick nugget as well, Jason, on Connor Nolan. He was in the South Bend rotation in 2023 where Brandon Birdsell was in the same rotation, and Birdie had a great year. So did Connor Nolan, but I felt like at times Nolan just fell under the radar because of how good Birdsell was. He's as big and as good of a strike thrower as I've ever covered, and he's got some pretty underrated breaking ball stuff. So I think that is a sneaky name for a guy that can jump into the Chicago Cubs rotation and kind of with ease get in there. So I hope the same for those two. But yeah, Christian Hernandez, breakout season. Enjoy it because it's here. He's been a stud.
So we've had an international flair with the last two guys we've talked about, so we might as well keep it going down in Myrtle Beach. I think he's been one of the best players overall so far in the Carolina League. Lionel Espinoza, top 10 in average home runs, RBI, slugging, OPS. What has been so impressive about his start to the season, Luke?
Well, if you look back at game one, Leo was at the bottom of the card for Yovani Cuevas. The first lineup sheet that Cuevas ever filled out, Espinoza was in the ninth spot. And he's worked himself up. We've seen him mostly in the 3-4 spot over the last few nights. But yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, 12 games. He's got 18 hits, 12 RBI in that span, an OPS just south of 1,000. He leads the team with three homers, and he's got the longest hitting streak in the Carolina League. It's 10 games, and the way that he got to 10 in last night's game, a nice little 5-for-5 featuring a homer and three RBI. I mean, he's as hot as could be. He's done it at the bottom of the card. He's done it in the middle of the lineup. He just stays on base, and it seems like when there's a big moment and he's at the plate, he's going to come through, driving a couple of runs, and you know, either push the Pelicans ahead or bring them back into a ball game. They've been playing from behind a little bit, and as we go into our favorite moments here in a couple minutes, that's going to be one of those themes, is playing from behind. But this is a resilient, resilient team, and a lot of it has started with Espinoza, but it's a really hard decision to make one player here because, as we mentioned, Evan Aschenbeck, Cole Mathis has found his swing. Angel Cepeda has been fantastic towards the top of the lineup as the number 17 prospect with the Cubs. So, you know, up and down, there's a bunch of names you could pick, but Espinoza has kind of forced my hand in the sense that he has been one of the hottest hitters in the Carolina League, no doubt, as of late.
Well, that puts a bow on the players that we've liked to watch early in the season. Again, we each had probably a handful, if not two hands full of choices for that honor. Everybody we mentioned is 25 or younger as well, so a lot to be excited about in that regard. So moving from players to plays of the season so far, we'll go back to you, Luke. I know you noted a big-time play very early in a game, but a big moment in a game in which you guys were down big in the first inning, gave up a 5 spot in the top half of the first. Owen Ayers came to the plate with the bases loaded, and I'll let you take us through the rest as we watch the clip.
Yeah, so Owen comes up, sacks full. It's a 5-0 game, and especially at this level, guys getting their first introduction into professional baseball, it felt almost as if, you know, are they going to lay down and just let this one get out of hand? And they loaded the bases, and throughout the series in the prior games, we'd seen a lot of left on base, especially in scoring position. Just hadn't been able to come up with a big hit. And Owen Ayers does it. That's a ball game that ends up going into 12 innings. The Pelicans found themselves on the wrong side of that. They lost in 12. But it was that hit has really propelled the confidence, I think, of this lineup in saying that there's no game that's over. There's no deficit that's out of reach. And, you know, they looked at Owen there. That was his first hit of the year. And limited action, he's got two, both have gone for extra bases in his four games played. And so that was really the big hit that kind of got things started. And you could see throughout the evening guys going to the plate with more confidence because, you know, they saw themselves behind 5-0 and knew they could climb back into any ball game at any given time.
Well, let's go from the first inning to the ninth inning in South Bend. BK Peoria mounting a bit of a rally, tying run on second. Go-ahead run is at first base. And a nice defensive play by a couple of corner infielders took care of the ballgame.
Yeah, you got to love it. And not an easy play, especially from Reggie Preciado to scoop that ball up right on the foul line, take it to the third base bag, and then off-balance style fire a throw to Drew Bowser at first base. Game-ending double play. Things don't get much prettier. I mean, you can argue like a called strike three to end the game with the bases loaded, but a game-ending double play. You got to love it. And especially, I think, add to the layer, the South Bend Cubs have lost 4 one-run games on the season so far this year. So, I mean, you know, it's a 4-8 record that could be totally different pending a couple swings. We played in the very cold out in Beloit, a couple balls that should have left the yard that should have won the game from our perspective. So clinching that game with that double play, that really helped things out because, first of all, it proves to the guys on the field, hey, we can do this. We can win these close games. Peoria had the tying run on base and the go-ahead run on base in a time where South Bend wasn't really commanding the ball well. But no, that ground ball to third, Preciado able to scoop it and then fire off for the 5-3 double play. That was a big moment in this season to start, and hopefully some big moments can follow too.
And Richie, you alluded to this moment earlier in Knoxville. Your play of the year so far was the go-ahead home run to open a new ballpark, bottom of the seventh inning. Take us through that.
Yeah, so to start the opening day game, you know, it was off to a great start. Smokies come out, score a run in the first inning. I think everybody was really relieved about that. We're like, all right, we got the lead early. We got one under our belt because we have struggled hitting so far to start the season. You know, in Rocket City on Saturday and Sunday, they struck out 17 times both games, but still won. Like, it's been a miraculous start to the season when you look at the stats. And then we score a first run in the first inning. Two more in the third. B.J. Murray hit the first ever home run here at Covenant Health Park with a no-doubter into the Modelo watering hole. So we're starting to feel really good. It's 3-0. You know, our starting pitcher's pitching really well. And then out of nowhere, Chattanooga scores 3 consecutive runs to tie it. So bottom of the seventh inning, you know, Casey Opitz, who's got some surprising pop, a guy that's been in and out of the starting lineup when Pablo's not catching, and the reliever just left one right over the middle of the plate. And you knew it off the bat that it had a chance to go. It's a deeper park here, 385 to the gaps in right and left center. But luckily, he was able to pull it enough to kind of get to where it's like 365. There's a lot of nooks and crannies in this ballpark. And when he hit it, I'm like, that's got a chance. And as it left the ballpark, I think everybody just exploded. Like, you know, the whole city of Knoxville was watching on TV, and it was amazing just to have Casey Opitz, you know, have the home run to win the game ultimately. It was probably one of my favorite moments in my career. And, you know, like I alluded to earlier, you know, same for Casey Opitz and the entire team too, because we had MLB authenticators here. So everything got authenticated from the first pitch to the last out, you know, the whole game. It's on the website. So it was pretty cool, you know, for Opitz to have his bat and all the memorabilia authenticated by Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I guess if you're going to open a ballpark in front of 6,000-plus people, hitting a go-ahead home run late in the game is a good way to get people to buy tickets for some future games. So that was a bright idea by you guys to let them tie it up and then play it that way.
Right, yeah. No, we definitely planned that. I mean, that was in the script.
Here in Iowa, we haven't necessarily had that one play to end a game or that swung a game. So I just wanted to go back to the Wednesday against St. Paul here. It was an afternoon. The wind was pushing out a little bit. The headline coming in, Quade Horton starting the game. He throws well. He allows one hit, a solo home run over 5 innings. And in the seventh inning, it's kind of a one-sided game. And then the I-Cubs just decide to demolish the baseball for the rest of the day, including facing a position player for the final 5 outs, and that's when you knew things were going to go off the rails. 20 runs were scored in that 20-6 win. That was the most since 2023. 24 hits, that was the most in well over a decade in I-Cubs history. 8 home runs, 5 of them coming in the seventh inning. That matched a franchise record, the first time that had been done in a very, very long time. And then an individual guy, if I had to pick, you know, one guy from all of the carnage that stood out, Moises Ballesteros, who's got a 7-game hitting streak in progress right now. He had 2 home runs. He doubled. He singled. He walked. He scored 5 runs, which tied a franchise record. And the last guy to tie that franchise record was Anthony Rizzo in 2012. So 9 guys have done it, but it's been a long time. And you've got to get on base in every at-bat, and then you need the guys behind you to hit. And that's exactly what happened on a Wednesday when everything was clicking. And that's a day where, as a broadcaster, you make sure you interview the hitting coach the next day, because he'll never be happier to talk than the night after a 20-run, 24-hit performance. Hard to find a hole in what he's doing with the lineup at that point. So a good group of moments here from early in the season. There's going to be a lot more as the games start to take on some more importance, and we move toward the halfway point and clinching playoff berths, and then, of course, the home stretch in the second half. So Just wanted to close out this episode with a couple of random questions, as we typically do. And whoever wants to jump on this one first, I'll go first just to give you some time to think. But maybe what is the best interview or the coolest person in your mind that you've interviewed in your life to this point, that if you were telling somebody, yeah, I got to talk to this person and it was great, that's the conversation you're going to. And I'll start. It was just a couple months ago. I had just announced that I was leaving Charleston, but the hot stove dinner to raise money for the Children's Hospital was the next week. So they let me MC it. And somehow they got Bo Jackson to be the featured speaker. And so Bo's in there and I shook his hand and he like broke every bone in my fingers because he's still a gigantic human being. But just an opportunity to sit down. He wanted to do like a fireside chat. So we had two recliners and we're just talking about his time in minor league baseball, which was very brief, Auburn, NFL, MLB. It was a really cool interview. And at the end, he actually auctioned off like five hunting trips with Bo Jackson to his ranch here in the Iowa, Illinois area, just outside of Chicago. And so five people left that dinner not having any clue that they were going to hunt with Bo Jackson in like a couple months. So that was a pretty cool night and one that I'm sure I won't forget at any point. But I'll let whoever wants to take it next talk about your favorite conversation like that.
I'll jump in. I'm going to go back to, if we're talking baseball exclusively, I'm going to go back to 2019 when Ben Zobrist was making his rounds through the Cubs minor league system. Ben played with South Bend, Myrtle Beach, Iowa. His time in South Bend, it was a very cool moment because I'm standing there watching batting practice, and here's Ben Zobrist taking BP. The Cubs game is on the big video board in right center. Albert Almora Jr. hits a home run, and you would have thought Ben Zobrist was in the dugout after the homer of how hyped he got. But I think one of the cooler things for the weekend was he played three games with us. Every Sunday afternoon before the game, the South Bend Cubs sign autographs on the concourse. And there's long tables, all the teams sitting together. If you pulled up to autographs on that Sunday afternoon, sitting next to Cubs manager Buddy Bailey is Ben Zobrist signing autographs before he plays a rehab game. And my job during the Sunday autographs is just to stand there and make sure, you know, everything's going cool, the line's moving along. And I talked to Ben Zobrist for about 20 minutes just about life and baseball and World Series and the game-winning hit in the 2016 World Series and just how cool that was. So I would point to getting a chat with Ben Zobrist signing autographs in the Midwest League Stadium on a Sunday afternoon. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll hop in next. Before I started doing minor league baseball, I was doing college broadcasting for a small Division I school, Youngstown State University up in Northeast Ohio. And we traveled in the Horizon League, so we played a lot in the Midwest. And we are actually up in Chicago at Curtis Granderson Stadium, which is the home of the University of Illinois Chicago. It was a senior day for UIC, and nobody in the league really had a visiting broadcaster except for us because I was a young kid just trying to break my teeth in the business. So they put me in like the general press box area, not in like a radio booth because they didn't have any room left. So I was just out in the general public, out in the press box doing my thing. And because of senior day, I learned this afterwards, Curtis Granderson showed up to the game with his family. So I'm sitting in the general press box and everybody knows it's Curtis Granderson when he comes in. I mean, 16-year career. I mean, he's unbelievable baseball player in the major leagues. He sits 3 feet from me with his family to the right. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, I got to get this guy on. I mean, it's his stadium. It's a senior day. I'm the visiting radio guy, but I don't think it really matters. So like, it's like the seventh inning. I politely go up to him like, hey, is there any way that you could like hop on for, just a half inning? And, one of the nicest guys in baseball, really. He hopped on. He talked about the financials it took to put the stadium together. The whole thing with the skyline, because I don't know if you guys have ever seen that park. It's got one of the most beautiful views in baseball with the city of Chicago in the background. So we talked about that. And then, of course, his career. But, I thought it was pretty cool at his stadium to get an interview with Curtis Granderson live on the broadcast. And the people in Youngstown were probably like, how is he talking to Curtis Granderson right now? Like, they're probably like, why is he on the broadcast with Curtis Granderson? But I thought it was pretty cool. So that's probably my favorite moment.
No, that's super neat. Curtis, the Grandy man was a childhood favorite of mine, watching him play the game right. But I'm gonna go with a quick two hitter on both. Away from baseball, so not specific baseball. I got a chance. Stephen A. Smith hosted a young, basically young athletes transitioning into media sort of thing when I was in high school, and I got to go on stage with him and then pick his brain after. And so that was really cool to see Stephen A. pouring into to the youth coming up in media, and a little bit different than he is on camera, off of camera. He's one of those guys. He's very much a character when on screen. But was really cool to get to pick his brain about that. And then on in terms of a true baseball interview, got the chance last year in Frisco playing against the Arkansas Travelers, the Mariners affiliate. Their manager was Christian Colon, and Colon, growing up a Royals fan in 2015, you know, one year prior to all the glory in Chicago, my hometown Kansas City Royals got it done in 15, and also had Ben Zobrist. Shout out Ben Zobrist. But got to talk to Christian about, you know, he had a month-long stint where he was not on the field, not in the lineup, but was on the postseason roster. And his first at bat came late in a ball game to tie it, a game that the Royals end up going on to win. They go on to win a World Series. So it was really cool to pick his brain about, you know, seeing things from a minor league perspective, growing up with, you know, some of the big stars, the big names that came through the Royals organization at that point in time. And then for him to have that signature moment of his career, what that was like for him playing for Team USA. He was the first captain of Team USA that wasn't a stateside born player. So it was really cool to just pick his mind about little things like that. And one of those very rewarding interviews for sure.
Good stuff. Good stuff. One more question, and then we'll wrap this episode up. I wanted to ask, athletes and especially baseball players have become sort of famous for having odd superstitions, right? Or something they have to do every day, or right before an at bat, or during an at bat. But I know that a lot of people have them, and especially broadcasters, where our lives are literally watching these guys have their superstitions. So, is there anything that you would consider a superstition related to baseball, related to the team, related to the game, or just in general that you have to do in your daily life to be to feel like you're in a good spot?
I've got
I
to
mean,
have
I can start.
Yeah,
Yeah.
no, please.
Yeah. So number one, when we travel, I have like a toiletry bag, and I am paranoid more than anything. And this is true of my equipment too. I have a checklist. Somehow I've made it for my toiletry bag where it rhymes. So like it's got a nice flow to it as I go down the list and make sure that everything's in there. And I do it like six times. And when I'm doing it at home before a road trip, my wife just looks at me and shakes her head like, dude, you're crazy. Why are you doing that? And I'm like, because I've never forgotten anything when I go on a road trip. The other thing is I have this giant, I don't have it in here right now, which is going to be an issue. So I need to bring it soon. It's a giant brass grasshopper paperweight that I've had since, God, 2014 when I was in Wichita. I was on the air in Grand Prairie and I was talking about this giant grasshopper landed on my crowd mic and slowly climbed up the cord into the booth. And it was like this big. And I said something about apparently everything is bigger in Texas because this grasshopper looks like a lizard. And one of the shortstop's mom, his name was Ryan Corey. Like when we got back home the next week, a package showed up and she got me this giant grasshopper paperweight. Long story short, we went on to win the championship that year, which was my first in pro baseball. And now I have four. And because that grasshopper is with me, I'm convinced that's why we keep winning championships. So grasshopper travels with me now everywhere we go. And it's just sitting there waiting to bring good luck. So I didn't bring it in here yet. So that, you know, we're off to a decent start, but it needs to show up soon.
Go ahead, Richie.
Yeah, I guess there's one ritual I've kind of done throughout my career in broadcasting. And I think it's just to kind of clear the mind and get away. Because we sit here, you know, all day and we're crunching numbers, we're doing our stat packs and the game notes, rosters, media lineups. And, you know, by the end of the day, you're like, man, like, I'm a little mentally exhausted right now. I still got to call a baseball game for 3.5 hours. So, the one thing I like to do before every game is I like to either put my headphones in or you know get on the phone and just take a full lap around our around the stadium, just kind of clear my head. I'll call my grandfather, my parents, or BK and I were talking about this because they got Tyler Hubbard coming to their ballpark in August. I like to throw some country music on and just kind of relax and clear the mind before you get back up in the booth. So that's kind of one thing I've done throughout my career to lock in.
So I'm very specific about my pens that I use in the broadcast booth. They've got to be like the four color multi pens that you use in first grade. And I probably look like an idiot every April because I go to the store and buy like mega packs of them. And but my scorebook is usually all color coded. So players' names, numbers, and positions in black ink. I'll put their stat line, average, homers, RBIs in blue. Stolen bases in purple, batting streaks in pink. Let's see, any other ones? I've got the starting pitcher game logs at the bottom of the book in like orange. So now I'm very specific about my pen colors and the pens that I use. So if I ever have to use like just a normal ballpoint pen, I'll feel like the world is crashing down in the broadcast booth. So very
That's why
specific with the pens.
you need a checklist so you don't forget one color.
It's just
No,
engraved in my mind
there
by
it is
now.
there.
So I've been doing it the same for since I was in Boise in 2017. So no, it's all the same. But no, yeah, if I lose any specific pen, then it's gonna be a bad day.
That's great. I don't have anything crazy interesting, but the best piece of advice that I've ever been given in my broadcasting career came from Royals television guy Ryan LaFever, who's kind of been my mentor over the course of my young career. So if you step into to the broadcast booth, which I have a very open door policy, anybody is always welcome in here. If you can find the way up to the booth, you can certainly open the door. But you'll always find I've got a note card that changes game in, game out of three things that I want to get better at on that given game. And so that those three things could stay the exact same for an entire homestand, or it could be that for each game, the homestand have something new, but once you get to a better point, cross that top one off and then fill it in with a third thing. Because as you guys know, no matter where you're at in your point and what point you're at in your career, there's always something that you feel like you can be doing better. So whether it's a reminder of, say the time and score, or whether it's the certain phrasing that you feel like you want to work in, just something in front of me at all times that's reminding me, you need to work on these three things, and then it's a revolving door. It'll change over the course of the year. So hopefully, there's nothing from this month that we find at the very end of the year still on my note card. That means something went wrong.
You've had six home games. Have you eaten the Chicago style pizza burger yet?
I have not, and I'm waiting until July where the River Dogs come to visit, and there will be video evidence of that for you, Jason.
So when you remove one of those things from your list of three, then I know what needs to go on there. Just
Okay, that's the
big
next thing.
block letters, eat the Chicago style pizza burger. It's not hard to cross off either. You just walk down there and they give it to you.
I was really close to dabbling in it, but made the decision I'm going to wait until July and wait until the former employer for Jason comes by and Charleston visits us, not all the way until July, which is crazy. We saw them week one and then don't see them until near the second half. But I did ask someone, what's the best food item in the ballpark? And that was suggested to me, but they said you have to be very hungry. And on that given night, I was not very hungry. I needed something quick, a quick hitter to get me through the broadcast, which I'm glad I did because we ended up with our 1 hour delay. We have one delay so far. It was an hour and 11 minute delay, followed by our longest game of the year, 3 hours and 34 minutes. So
That some would say that's the universe getting you back for not eating the
yeah, I
right
should have
pizza.
just gotten
Just saying.
the pizza burger.
All right, I'm gonna leave you guys on this note. I told you that my toiletry list kind of rhymes. I'm gonna give you the first three bars, and if we want to, if somebody wants to turn this into a rap song, feel free. You can do it. It just goes from top to bottom. It goes contacts, contact case, glasses, case, toothbrush, toothpaste, and we're rolling. And we're rolling
Okay.
at that point.
See, essentials right there.
It feels like it needs to be a childhood song that, every kid learns, just so every time they go on the road,
That's
run through.
right. That's the goal. That's the goal. And there's going to be a short comic book coming out soon with the same theme. So stay tuned for that. All right, gentlemen. Congrats on a good start to the year. I've been able to tune into the broadcast and everybody sounds great. good baseball so far, a lot of exciting players, and looking forward to getting together again in a couple weeks.
All right, fellas. Looking forward to it.
We'll talk to you soon.